later with Mr. Tom Rossley and Professor John McAdams about the Kennedy assassination. Now, the first debate, as I said, was in April, about 11 months ago, roughly. I'll just get right into it. I'll post the links, by the way, to the first debate if you want to listen to that first. Mr. Rossley is taking the position that the assassination of John F. Kennedy on November 22, 1963 was a result of a conspiracy. Professor McAdams maintains that the Warren Commission was initially correct, saying that the assassination was done by Lee Harvey Oswald alone. I'll start with, if you don't mind, Mr. McAdams, I'll start with Mr. Rossley first.
Sure.
Mr. Rossley, is there anything that is there anything in the first debate that you wanted to clarify or that you forgot to bring up during the first debate?
Well, I guess there's a lot of things about Oswald's security clearance and everything else.
Right.
And that he's actually a spy for the U.S. government.
Yeah.
You see, if there was no conspiracy, there'd be no need for a cover-up. If there was no conspiracy, there'd be no need to lie and destroy evidence repeatedly. And that's what I focus on.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything from the first debate that you wanted to further on? I know last debate we talked about Oswald, his connection to Guy Bannister, and does it go deeper than that? Does it go deeper than just Guy Bannister? I mean, is it high levels of U.S. intelligence that you believe that Oswald was employed with?
No, I can't speak to that because I didn't know Oswald and I didn't know his associates.
Okay.
I can't connect him to United States intelligence.
Right.
The names of them, I'm not privy to.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
But I know that there are a lot of reports that P. Howard Hunt was seen at 544 Camp Street.
Okay. Yeah.
We know that E. Howard Hunt was in Dallas that weekend.
But we
along
don't
with the Watergate burglars.
We don't know any such thing.
No, you don't. I said we do. Those of us that have studied the official records, Doctor.
Okay. I guess the same question goes to you, Professor McAdams, unless you just want to jump in and respond to that. Was there anything from the first debate that you wanted to
Tom mentioned a document where I think it was Rankin wrote to the FBI asking the FBI to check on a report that Dan Rather had seen Ruby and Oswald together in the Carousel Club.
Yeah.
It was clearly a third-hand report reported by somebody else on, I think, KRLD or CBS or something like that. Somehow, Tom, whenever the Warren Commission asked the FBI to check on something, the FBI would run out and check on it. So it's interesting that Tom somehow didn't feel the need to find out what the FBI found when they ran out and checked on it. On the Mary Farrell Archive, it was very easy to search for Dan Rather, in quotes, and Carousel Club. And the FBI did run down Rather and found out that he had never been in the Carousel Club and therefore could not possibly have seen Ruby and Oswald together in the Carousel Club. Apparently a cohort of his had apparently simply misunderstood something that he'd said. That's in FBI documents. If Tom actually wants to know the actual citation, it's the FBI 44-24016 Ruby Headquarters File Section 56, and several other places besides. Anybody who's looked at these documents needs to understand that they tend to get copied and sent around all over the place, so these particular documents will be in different places, but the FBI simply established that that was bogus. There are tons of bogus reports that came out very early on that were no better than rumors. For example, NBC reported that Kennedy had been taken to the hospital in an ambulance. There was a report that there had been a shootout in the Texas theater and that a cop had been killed in a shootout in the Texas theater. There was a report that Jackie was sitting in the back seat of the limo between Kennedy and Connolly. There were simply tons of bogus reports, and this apparently was one of them.
Right.
And they were run down, and corrections were finally made.
Okay.
Counterpoint.
Sure.
Are you going to allow him to cover 16 subjects at once? Or are you going to ask us to stick to one subject at a time?
Yeah, I'd like to stick to one subject at a time.
All right, then let's get back to Dan Rather.
Okay.
I've got it in front of me. What he said was, if this was what the Warren Commission wrote to Hoover, they wanted the FBI to check a station KRLD, and they told him what tape to look for about Rather claiming he saw Oswald at the Carousel Club.
Mm-hmm.
It was on videotape, or whatever they had it back in those days.
It wasn't Rather saying that. It was,
you were interrupting again, sir? I didn't
interrupt
you when you were rambling with 16 different subjects at once.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Professional courtesy, please.
Yeah.
So what they asked the Warren Commission to do was get the tape, the actual film of Dan Rather's claim. And they didn't do that. What they did was they went and interviewed Dan Rather. And we already know what kind of a liar Dan Rather is when he described the fatal headshot as, quote, forward with considerable violence, unquote.
Right.
So they didn't do what the Warren Commission asked the FBI to do, which to get the tape, to get the actual film of Dan Rather claiming to have been seeing Oswald in the Carousel Club. Now, what's the next subject you want to cover?
No, let me correct that. The FBI did what they should have done, which was I don't doubt that was on the tape. There was a man named Bill Dollar, apparently was the source of that, and Rather clarified it when the FBI went and talked to him. I don't know why Rossley believes that anything that's in the early coverage on tape must be true. I've just given you a bunch of examples of things that were utterly ridiculous that were reported by the media early on. You have to look at the follow-up. You have to see what happened. And Rather said he had not seen any such thing. By the way, I searched the Mary Farrell archive to see if there were any conspiracy books that used that particular factoid, and there essentially aren't, or at least none that turn up in Mary Farrell's rather extensive index. This is such a wild thing that it's used in few, if any, conspiracy books.
No, I got this from the 26th volume, sir. I've never quoted any conspiracy books.
Well, it's
if I did, I'd bury all the Warren Commission supporters by quoting Harold Weisberg.
Okay, I just want to ask Mr. Rossley a question. Is there anything within the 26 volumes of the Warren Report, the evidence and testimony that establishes a link between Lee Oswald and Jack Ruby?
There's several reports of people that saw them together.
Okay.
In the 26 volumes. And then if you go to the Dallas Police Department's website, you'll find bushels more of reports of people seeing Oswald and Ruby together.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, in the Dallas Police Department's website, there's a link to it on my website. It has 20 boxes, and each one of those boxes contains hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of files. All they are numbers. I've got a... what do you call it? I've got an index of them somewhere, but I can't find it right now.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. What's your website again, just so people can know?
WhoKilledJFK.net.
Okay, and Professor McAdams, what's your website?
JFKAssassination.net. Let me mention the website that Tom Rossley's talking about is not actually the Dallas Cops. It's the Dallas Municipal Archives. It has no index per se, but it does have a list of all the documents which you can download and then do a brute force Control-F search, and you can see what's in there. It is indeed a very useful website. And yes, there were reports seeing Oswald with Ruby. There were also reports seeing Oswald in, for example, Alice, Texas, with his wife, looking for a job at a radio station where he could not have been, in a selective service office in Austin, where he could not have been, on a shooting range where he could not have been, in a car auto dealership where he could not have been. There are just tons and tons of bogus reports, sightings of Oswald all over the place.
Counterpoint.
Yes. Sure.
Unless it was somebody impersonating Oswald, which has happened repeatedly.
Hmm.
It's just like last time on the first debate, McAdam said that Oswald was in Houston,
right,
trying to contact a Mr. Twyford.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I said that that's not true. Because Twyford, whatever.
Hmm.
And then I said that's not true because he was in Dallas. He was at Sylvia Odio's house. And then he said that, and I said that Mrs. Twyford, Her report says that Oswald called in late October, not September, when he was supposedly on his way to Mexico City. And furthermore, we found out that Oswald was in Dallas on the 25th because he cashed his unemployment check in Dallas on the 25th. So, again, Oswald is repeatedly seen elsewhere
that
because
is,
he's impersonated. In Mexico City.
Counterpoint. Number one, concerning Twyford, Estelle Twyford first thought that, but then she and her husband both testified that she had told her husband, who was away at sea, when he returned that Lee Harvey Oswald had tried to contact her, and her husband 26, the day after. It's also the case that there's ironclad, handwritten evidence tying the Twyfords to Oswald. Twyford was a high official in the Socialist Labor Party in Texas. Oswald had sent a coupon to the office in New York asking for literature. It had been forwarded to Twyford in Houston, and the Twyfords produce that for investigators. Estelle Twyford also wrote a little note that said Lee Oswald when Oswald called, and she later produced that. So the evidence tying Oswald to the Twyfords is pretty much ironclad. I think Sylvia Odio honestly believed that she saw Oswald on the evening. Well, she was vague on when she saw Oswald, by the way. She thought it was the evening of the 26th or 27th, which couldn't have happened. The only time it could have happened was on the 25th. But I think she honestly believed that she saw Oswald. But if you look carefully at her testimony, that seems to have been heavily the result of a connection she made when the character whom she thought was Oswald was described to her by a fellow named Leopoldo, that was this morning, as sort of crazy and violent, and having said that Kennedy ought to be shot. In other words, she made a connection between something she had heard. She, by the way, in her testimony, she says she made that connection before she saw Oswald on television, which is interesting because that implies that she was, in essence, the victim of suggestibility. She really came to believe she'd seen Oswald. I don't doubt it was just the strong power of suggestion. This Oswaldo guy, or that's the name that it was actually described by that name. Who knows? The power of suggestion based on what Leopoldo had told him.
Counterpoint.
Sure.
The House Select Committee on Assassinations believes Sylvia Odio. That's it from report page 139. And later on, the Warren Commission supporters said that it wasn't Oswald at Odio's. They said it was three anti-Castro Cubans. They said it was Lauren Hall, a guy named Gonzalez, and William Seymour. And then when the House Select Committee had interviewed them, they said they were never at Sylvia Odio's. Lauren Hall said he was never at Sylvia Odio's. That's volume 10 of the House Select Committee.
Yeah, he first said he did, and then he said he wasn't.
No, the Warren Commission said he did.
He first told the FBI he had, and then he backed off of it. It's hard to know whether he was just making up stories
for
the FBI, or whether, if you'd let me talk, Tom, or whether he said that, and then his buddies thought, oh, good heavens, what have we gotten ourselves into? You better recant that, because we don't want to get mixed up in this. It's difficult to know, and I have no idea really for sure who was there. All I know is that there's very strong evidence that on the evening of September 25th, Lee Oswald was trying to contact Horace Twyford in Houston.
Nope. He cashed his unemployment check in Dallas on the 25th, sir.
On the morning, very early in the morning.
What time in the morning? Where do I find that, sir? What volume and page do I find that on? It'll be morning.
It's in the Warren Commission report. It's in a document. There's an extensive document trail in the Warren Commission volumes where the FBI actually traced.
Give me the volume and page numbers. What I asked you.
I don't have the volume and page numbers.
Then you shouldn't incorporate anything you've said.
It's in a manuscript I have at work. I am at home.
A manuscript written by whom?
Guys.
By me.
Mr. Rossley, let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. Then I want to ask Professor McAdams a question. Have you ever read the book Crossfire by Jim Mars?
Yes, I have.
Okay, he I don't know how true this is. He says in the book that Jack Ruby subjected himself to a polygraph test. And he was asked about whether he knew Lee Oswald, and he said, no, I don't, and he passed. What do you make of that?
Nothing. That's why I never quote any author's book, sir. That's why I only quote the official records.
Is that not true, though? Did that not happen?
I have no idea. Just because something is printed in a book doesn't make it factual.
No, I understand.
I'm sure you know that.
Yeah, sure. No, I agree with you.
That's why I never quote anybody's books.
Right.
Counterpoint.
Sure.
It's an official document that he passed. I wouldn't necessarily put a great deal of confidence. First of all, lie detector tests really don't have huge forensic value. They can't be introduced at in trial proceedings. Secondly, authorities, Warren Commission, FBI, etc., sort of caved in and let Ruby take his lie detector test because Ruby really wanted to. And then when he took the test, it was extended far longer than it should have been because Ruby almost pathetically was insistent that he had to prove that he was innocent of any involvement in a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. He insisted that emphatically to the Warren Commission. He insisted it in his lie detector test. He insisted it until the day he died. So I don't think that per se proves anything much. It's just that there really is no evidence that, number one, that Ruby knew Oswald. Number two, that Ruby was part of any conspiracy.
Out of Kennedy.
Yeah, sure.
Professor, I got two questions. Have you read the Jack Ruby's lie detector test in 26 volumes, and do you know how lie detector tests are performed?
I know how they're performed. I haven't read the entire transcript. It's horribly long.
You do know how they're performed?
Very much. Sure.
Then you know that there are certain questions that you asked in the beginning to
sure.
set up.
Sure.
Okay. Well, that was never done in Jack Ruby's transcript of his lie detector test, was it, sir?
They
never had it.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't care much because, as I told you, lie detector tests do not have much forensic value.
Okay.
Are you denying that some people are doing prison time right now based on lie detector tests? Are you denying that, sir?
Well, yes, I am denying it because
it
cannot be entered in a court proceeding. Now, it is true that sometimes lie detector tests, like more recently voice stress analysis, has a virtue for law enforcement, and sometimes someone will be asked to take a lie detector test, and they'll know that it will look bad for them if they say, no, I'm not going to, and they can be intimidated. And cops do have ways of intimidating people. Voice.
Oh, I'm well aware of it. I've read the 26 volumes.
Lie detector or another, but it's simply not admissible in criminal proceedings in court.
Okay.
Why did they put it in the 26 volumes if it's not admissible, sir?
It wasn't a court proceeding. Not everything in there.
Professor McAdams, I got a question for you. Mr. Rossley brought it up. And I think it was a pretty good point. And he brought up last debate, too, is why was Lee Oswald constantly being impersonated? When he was even in the Soviet Union, they bought trucks under his name for a right-wing anti-Castro Cuban group. That does raise, doesn't that raise some suspicions to you, unless there's a different understanding?
Well, no, because he wasn't impersonated. What you have there is a very, very large number of false Oswald sightings. You know, if you just go out and Google ordinary criminal cases, you'll find that anytime there's a murder or kidnapping and there's a suspect at large, the cops will be, in some cases, deluged, but in all cases, at least a fair number of bogus sightings of people who thought they saw someone that looked like the person, thought it was the person, and it turns out it wasn't. That's very normal. It's particularly normal in the most celebrated criminal case of the 20th century. In that case in New Orleans, why would anyone impersonate Oswald when he was in the Soviet Union, and they presumably knew he was in the Soviet Union? Mm-hmm. But that particular document from that auto dealer in New Orleans has the name Oswald written in above the line, looking for all the world like the document was tampered with or it was written in later. But it's simply difficult to see why you would It's Friends of Democratic Cuba, if memory serves. Why do you need to associate Oswald with Friends of Democratic Cuba? And indeed, if you're a conspiracy trying to set up Oswald as a left-winger, why in the world do you want him associated with Friends of Democratic Cuba? It makes no sense that someone would impersonate Oswald doing that. It makes a little bit of sense that someone might impersonate Oswald being a left-winger, or talking violently about killing Kennedy. It makes no sense at all that any conspiracy would have someone impersonating Oswald out of pretending to be a right-winger.
Mr. Rossley?
Yeah, are you going to let this guy rant on and on and on without giving any citations for what he claims? J. Edgar Hoover suspected someone using Oswald's birth certificate while Oswald was in Russia.
Right.
This guy just rants on and on and on, and he gives no citations whatsoever. I thought he's supposed to uphold the Warren Commission's report. Then he should use their volumes and pages to back up what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another one. How did Oswald, if he made a buck and a quarter an hour, how did he pay back $400 in a month and a half?
Well,
the U.S. government and his brother. How did he pay $400 in a month and a half?
Let me answer that, but I've just now forgotten the previous point that Rossley was trying to make. Would you remind me?
From now on, I'll call you McAdams, then, if you insist on Rossley instead of Tom.
The previous point you were making, you make a point, then you can jump to something else. What was the previous point before?
About you never given citations for any of your claims.
No. It was a substantive point you were making.
No, the initial question I asked about was Oswald being impersonated in for Biden?
Yeah, I was saying that it would make no sense at all to have somebody impersonate Oswald as a right winger if he was being set up as a left winger.
Right.
And I don't know what I'm trying to remember. Rossley brought up the money issue, and I forgot what he said just before. I know Margaret. Oh, Hoover's letter. Yeah, Hoover wrote a letter saying someone might be using Oswald's passport. That was essentially the Marguerite, his mom's crazy notion. She went to the FBI saying that she wouldn't believe that her son could possibly be what in the Cold War would have seemed to be a traitor, someone who defected to the Soviet Union. She went to the FBI. She complained that she thought someone was impersonating her son. It couldn't really be her darling boy over there. And that's the whole point. People need to understand that letters like that that have Hoover's name on them are drafted by subordinates, and it doesn't reflect the FBI's judgment that somebody is. There was no evidence that anyone actually had used Oswald's passport. It simply reflects the fact that there'd been a report that might happen, and essentially it says, keep your eyes open for this guy, and it could happen. As for the Doc 25, the Warren Commission went over very carefully all of Oswald's finances. It's in an appendix to the Warren Commission where they work it through dollar by dollar. The truth is Oswald was the world's champion cheapskate, and he certainly managed to pay the money back.
Mr.
How did he pay? My question was, how did he pay $400 in a month and a half, sir?
First you said four and a half, and now it's a month and a half.
I said a month and a half. $400 is exactly what I said.
Yeah, right.
But if memory serves, it took him way more than a month and a half.
Then you're not well read on your own records. Because it's a matter of record that he paid $400 in 1.5 months.
I'm not aware of that. Give me a citation on that.
That's in Marina's deposition to Garrison.
Definition to Garrison, when he paid it back would be in State Department documents because he paid it back to the State Department.
Correct.
Cite the State Department document that says when he paid it back.
I'm citing what was said under oath, sir.
By Marina to Garrison. The simple fact is if you look in the appendix to the Warren Commission, they go through it. In effect, dollar by dollar, trying to reconstruct his finances. And it certainly took more than a month and a half for him to earn enough to pay it back at $1.25 an hour.
When he worked, he was paying $10
at the Louvre Pack Division of the Leslie Welding Company.
Here's the record, sir, that you seem to have missed. Oswald was paying him $10 a month. And then he paid 1 month $190. Another month he paid $100. Another month he paid $106. How did he do that if he was making $100, $1.25 an hour when he worked? When he wasn't working, he was making $33 a month unemployment. So you don't seem to think that that should, is worthy of investigation, huh?
It was investigated very thoroughly by the Warren Commission.
The Warren Commission has proven to be liars, sir. Even four members of the Warren Commission did not believe in their basic findings about the single bullet theory. Four members out of six didn't believe the single bullet theory.
You want to talk about that?
Sure. I just brought it up.
Sure. Richard Russell, for example, didn't believe the single bullet theory because John Connolly's testimony was inconsistent with the single bullet theory. But Richard Russell did believe, you can hear this in a September conversation he had with LBJ.
I've got it.
That Oswald was guilty. He described Oswald as a, quote, general misanthropic guy.
Yeah.
LBJ asked Richard Russell, or vice versa, I forget which, well, what difference does it make with the single bullet theory is true? And the other one said, oh, it doesn't make a bit of difference.
But we know it does, don't we, Professor?
Well, that just shows how well-informed both of them were.
No, the word is that there were four members out of the six that did not believe the single bullet theory, sir. The only two that believed it were proven liars.
You're citing
Alan Dulles and Gerald Ford.
You're citing people's opinions. You're not citing actual facts on the single bullet theory. Want to talk about
the AWRB, which is an official record, says that four members of the Warren Commission did not believe the basic facts.
Want to talk about the actual facts about the single bullet theory and evidence on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to do that?
Yes.
Page 92 of the Warren Report. The bullet hole in the back of his jacket was 5 3/8 inches below the top of the collar. The bullet hole in the back of Kennedy's shirt was 5 3/4 inches below the top of the collar. They both matched the hole on the face sheet from the autopsy, and they both correspond. Are you there?
Yes.
I'm here.
And they both correspond with Secret Service agent Glenn Bennett in the follow-up car. Says I heard a shot and saw a bullet hit the boss 4 inches below the shoulders.
Okay, let's talk about the back wound. Number one, the best evidence of the back wound is quite simply the autopsy photo of Kennedy's back.
Phony.
There's a ruler.
Wait, guys, please, just one at a time.
Okay, I have a right to talk about the back wound now.
Okay.
Okay, the best evidence on the nature of the back wound is actually it's twofold. This is a stereo pair of Kennedy's back taken at the autopsy. There is a ruler in those photos. The first generation prints, which are available in the National Archives, allow you to actually read the ruler. The forensic pathology panel, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, said that the back wound was 13.5 centimeters below the tip of the right mastoid process. That would put the wound at C71, consistent with a single bullet theory. That's also consistent with Kennedy's clothing defects. Quite simply, a simple way to look at it is this. If the top of Ken, I've recreated this in class several times. In fact, did it just Wednesday in my JFK class. If the top of Kennedy's jacket, his coat jacket, was about level with the tip of his mastoid process, which is the bony prominence behind each person's ear, that would work out just perfectly, and it wouldn't need to be that high if the jacket was somewhat bunched. Lots of photographs of the motorcade show it at least a bit bunched, including particularly the Croft photo, which was made as it rounded the corner of Houston onto Elm. Mm-hmm. So the best evidence, quite simply, is the photos from the autopsy, and they put the wound at C7-T1, which is the seventh cervical vertebra and the first
thoracic vertebra.
Professor McAdams, I just want to ask Professor McAdams a quick question that Mr. Rossley brought up. Isn't it true that Floyd, I think his last
Reby.
Name is Reby. Isn't it true that he said that he was a photographer, a photographer? Isn't it true that he said that when he saw the pictures later that they were faked?
Oh, sure. In the 1990s, you got all kinds of people looking at the pictures. Doug Horn and the Assassination Records Review Board. It was Horn who was basically, he was a lifter. He was a sort of a disciple of David Lifton. He got lots of people to say that the photos were not as he remembered them. Hmm. An interesting thing about that, however, is that often recollections contradicted not only what the photo showed, they contradicted each other. It was O'Neill, the FBI, who said that he looked at the back of the head photo and said, well, gosh, there was a big wound back there. I don't remember it looking like that. But then you get Stringer, who photographed the autopsy, who didn't mention anything about a big wound. He said, well, gosh, I thought the entrance wound, which is a small defect, I thought that was lower than that.
So, where could I find it?
And I thought they not only both contradict the autopsy photos, they contradict each other. The chief counsel of the Assassination Records Review Board spoke at Stanford on this, and he said, the key thing is that eyewitness testimony, particularly a 30-year-old eyewitness testimony, is just grossly, he said, underscored grossly unreliable.
Okay. Mr. Rossley?
Yeah, counterpoint.
Sure.
The ARRB hired and paid a professional named Doug Horn to review all of the autopsy material.
Mm-hmm.
And in the nuts, and he wrote a book on it, and it comes in 5 volumes.
Right.
Do you have them, Professor?
No, I don't.
Okay, I do. And he said, in a nutshell, the whole autopsy was phony. It wasn't written twice, it was written 3 times. And the autopsy photos are phony, the autopsy x-rays are phony, and sometimes those pictures were not even of Kennedy's body. And he interviewed everybody that worked on it at Bethesda and Parkland. And he said the whole thing is phony. Now that's official from somebody that served on the ARRB, sir.
It had access
to all the material and all of the witnesses.
He was simply a staffer. He did not represent the ARRB, came up with no such official determination. He came up with all kind of crazy testimony. For example, he came up with one woman who said, looked at all the photos and said, well, no, I don't remember it looking like this. It wasn't so gory. It wasn't, his head wasn't so messed up. It wasn't so bad. All the photos looked sort of nicer and cleaner, and they were all in color, she said. I think that was Sandra Spence.
And they weren't even on the same film that the photographer used.
Right. But then you
it's all phony.
No, the memory is bad. Why would anyone want to fake a set of autopsy photos to make Kennedy's wounds look nicer? Anyone could see his head blowing apart.
Where can I find out that the pictures made it look nicer than they actually were? Where can I find
Sandra Spencer's testimony?
Who?
Sandra Spencer, remember?
Sandra Spencer said that those aren't the pictures that she developed.
That's right. She said that the pictures she developed showed Kennedy's wounds to be much less dramatic, much less gory than the one she developed, which raises an interesting question is why anyone would want a... She speculated, by the way. Kennedy.
Under those people speculate?
Well, of course, as people speculate, I'm giving you her interpretation. She speculated that the Kennedy family might have wanted a not-so-nasty-looking set of pictures to make public or something.
Well, they were never supposed to be public, sir, so that's wrong.
And the pictures that we have are consistent with the violence we see in Dealey Plaza, particularly the head wound. We see Kennedy's head exploding. The autopsy pictures that we have are consistent with the Zapruder film, the Nix film, the Much More film.
Absolutely not. The right side of and the autopsy photos, the right side of Kennedy's head is perfect. And you look at the Zapruder frame at 313, the right side of his head is gone. So again, you got phony in.
That's not true.
Oh, okay.
People are sometimes confused with a red blob.
I think the ones that are confused are the ones that have not read the 26 volumes, such as
let me explain why.
Or the Church Committee's volumes, or the House Select Committee's volumes.
Okay. Let me explain why the Zapruder film can be a bit confusing. There is a pink blob hanging down in Kennedy's right temporal area. So you might think that shows where his head is blown open. In fact, that's a piece of... a scalp that is blown back. The autopsy photos and the autopsy x-rays shows bone intact there, although it does show it shows that essentially the right top of his head was blown out, but a flap, we have Jackie's testimony, for example, that there was a flap of his scalp there that she was trying to hold back in place. She was sort of trying to, in desperation, trying to put his head back together. Right. And that's a somewhat confusing. There is no doubt, by the way, that the brain matter, as seen in all three films, Nick's much more in Zapruder, the brain matter blows forward and upward, or at least that's the main axis. The truth is, it sort of blew all over the place. It was a gory mess, yeah. But that's the main axis.
You're referring to the Zapruder film?
Zapruder, Nixon, much more, yeah.
Okay.
Want to say
Zapruder? Well, had you gotten the books of Duck Horn, he goes into detail of how the Zapruder film was altered, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Rossley, you think the Zapruder film was altered as well?
Absolutely. I found that in the beginning. When you read Zapruder's testimony, he had his camera set on full zoom. He called it telephoto back then, and he never changed it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the Zapruder film, when they come out from behind the sign, and they pass that first light pole,
yeah,
it zooms in. Now, how can it zoom in if it was already on full photo, full telephoto? And the reason they zoomed it in was, read page 68 of volume 1 of the House Select Committee, when they were told to put a black bar across the bottom of the frames where most of the action takes place. So what they did was they put a black bar across the frames from Governor Connally's chin to his navel, so you don't see him shot in the chest, as for all the original reports have said. Dan Rather said it, the Dallas newspaper said it, and other witnesses said it, he was shot in the chest.
Okay. So you're saying
then
the
what
reason...
they did was they blew the frames up so you wouldn't see the black bar blocking out half of the frame.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And said that that tiny black line across is the line between frames.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you go to my website, you can see the actual film, and you can see the actual black bar in motion on the Zapruder film. Right. You can see above it, you can see below it. So, yeah, the Zapruder film was tampered with. And there's even more proof in Doug Horn's books.
If the Zapruder film was tampered with, right, and they take out the back end of the left stuff.
Because they couldn't very well do it, could they?
I don't see why not. If they could tamper with everything else.
Yeah.
I just gave you an official source for what I said, sir. Well, I mean,
it's an official source.
There's no doubt, Volume 1,
House Select Committee.
There's no doubt that Connally had a wound in his chest. Why they didn't want to conceal that, I don't know. In fact, it makes no sense. There's no doubt that Kennedy had that Connally had a wound in his chest. I think you're talking about is if you print everything on the Zapruder film absolutely full frame to get all the information, you're going to pick up a little bit of the black area between frames. So I've seen copies of it that, yeah, do show a black area, but it's not anything, there's not any actual information missing there.
Sure, I just showed you the black bar
from the edge of the frame.
I'll tell you for the third time, you can see the black bar from his chin to his navel on my website. I actually show it in motion. You can see above the bar and below the bar.
But Connally's hit, you can certainly see you can certainly see that area from the time he's hit in Zapruder frame 223 to the time he starts to react in the 230s.
That's true, sir. Read the doctor's testimony. He was hit at frame 234. And he himself says he was hit between frame 231 and 234. Mm-hmm. It's all in the volumes that you don't have, Professor. I don't know how you teach a college class without the basic materials.
Okay, Mr. Ross.
I hope someday one of your students doesn't sue you.
Okay, ridiculous.
Mr. Rossley, is it true that in the Warren Commission, the doctors who took care of Governor Connally testified that the chest wound was an entrance wound?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Is it Professor McAdams?
If you give me a moment, I'll tell you what volume and what page it's on. Do you want that?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay, bear with me.
Professor McAdams, is that accurate?
No. Frankly, I forget the details. It came up on the news group, and Tom's basically has been distorting a source. Let's see what he wants to read here.
Okay.
It was an oval wound, small oval wound in the back, typical of an entrance wound, and a large sucking wound below the right nipple in the chest, a typical of an exit wound. And if he was shot from the front and it entered his back, what does that say about the trajectory? I mean,
wrong, sir. The wound in Connolly's back was elliptical. The wound in Connolly's chest was perfectly round. And there's a picture of it in the 26 volumes.
Who are the doctors?
So you got that one backwards, too.
Mr. Rossley, who are the doctors? Both of you gentlemen will probably know the answer. Who were the doctors?
Shires of Jaw.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well, as memory serves, Shires, I don't know if he'd made it back in the town. Shaw was the thoracic surgeon who operated on Connolly.
Okay.
I just told you, Shires and Shaw, and it was Gregory that worked on the wrist wound.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Governor Connolly himself said that he heard a shot and he turned to his left and the president had slumped. That's on video.
He said the Zapruder film did not turn to the left, he turned to the right.
Well, we've already told you the Zapruder film is doctored, sir. Now can I finish my point?
Why would you want to change a turn to the left or turn to the right?
I'm telling you what Governor Connolly himself said, and it's on video, sir. In the interview with Martin Agrowski 4 days after the assassination,
he said, I turned
to my left, the president had slumped. I turned to my right, couldn't see him, as I started to turn.
Yeah, the Zapruder film is turning to the right.
So you missed quite a bit. I don't understand how you teach your college course if you missed all this stuff. I hope one of your students doesn't sue you.
Don't be for personal attacks.
Okay.
But Tom, what do you have there?
I'm looking it up. I've got a lot of notes, my friend.
Oh, okay. Okay, we'll get back to this. We'll get back to that, I suppose, unless you want to wait. It's up to you, Jeff.
No, let's go to another issue. Why don't we?
Sure.
We can come back to it.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. What about the actual... this is more to the point. This is more basic stuff that you guys are, I'm sure, pretty familiar with. Did Oswald have the opportunity to do it? There's a lot of people who say that there's no way that he could have gotten from the sixth floor of the depository to there within 90 seconds because it was known that he saw the officer and his manager within 90 seconds, roughly, of the shooting.
Officer Banker and Roy Truly.
Yes.
Well, it goes further than that. The House Select Committee will tell you that within 2 minutes of the shooting, somebody moved the boxes in that window. So now that's going to give Oswald less time if it was Oswald in that window, isn't it?
So you'd have to, like, jump
within
around.
Within 2 minutes of the shooting, someone moved the boxes in that window.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no reason anyone would move the boxes. Dale Myers actually did a recreation, and the House Select Committee was apparently simply inaccurate about that.
Now we're going to get a cartoonist that's going to contradict an official record. You're terrific.
Why in the world would Oswald move the boxes?
I don't think Oswald was ever there, my friend.
Somebody
moved the boxes within 2 minutes of the shooting. If it was Oswald, it certainly wouldn't give him enough time to get to the second floor lunchroom within 90 seconds.
What would be the point of a conspirator moving the boxes? There's no reason to move the boxes.
Why don't you find out who the conspirators were and ask them, sir?
You tell me.
You're too busy covering up the conspiracy.
You tell me who the conspirators were. There's the Warren Commission, an FBI guy, timed it, and they got two different times, both were under 90 seconds. And the key thing to remember is that Baker, Oswald, did not make it into the second floor lunchroom before he saw Baker. Baker actually saw him going into the lunchroom and then followed him into the lunchroom.
You're wrong again, Professor. Baker gave four different statements as to where Oswald was and where he was when he spotted Oswald. Four separate statements. He lied an absolute minimum of three times.
But Baker's testimony is clear. He saw Oswald on the landing. And
which one is clear, sir?
The Warren Commission testimony is the clearest because he was questioned most extensively.
Oh, you mean after the witness has been coached? Is that what you're talking about, 10 months later?
You have no evidence he was coached.
Every witness is coached, sir. Don't you know anything about jurisprudence? Every witness is coached before he's put on the stand.
There's no reason.
As a matter of fact, it's replete in all of the testimony with a lot of those witnesses.
Tom Ross, eventually will simply claim everybody was a liar who gives testimony that
said. No, I'm specific in who I said is lying, sir. I'm very specific. I never said everybody. You're the one that says everybody's lying, that their testimony conflicts with Alona's absence. But yet you never prove it. You've never quoted a volume or a page on anything you've ever said in the first 3.5 hours or this 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Never.
I know, Tom, actually you haven't either. Give us a quote from Shires, sir. Was it Shires you said that Kennedy was hit, that Connolly was hit from the front?
It was Shaw or Shires? Shires. I'm looking it up, sir.
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up, too, as a matter of fact. Because I got the, I don't have the actual book form. I've got the CD-ROM. In fact, Mr. Rossley is the one who directed me to get it. Pretty cheap, instead of paying, what is it, about $1,000 to get the original 27.
Well, the volumes are running anywhere from $1,150 to $3,500.
Yeah. So, yeah, the...
But the CD-ROMs will run you $80, yeah.
Right, yeah. I actually got it for $40.
Really?
Yeah, on eBay. And I got the House Select for $20, so I kind of got a steal on that one. Professor McAdams, let me ask you a question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
One thing that Mr. Rossley brought up in the chat room on Pal Talk, where Mr. Rossley could be found, almost every night, I believe. Is that true, Mr. Rossley?
Just every night, sir, for 11 years.
Yeah.
I've never had a Warren Commission supporter come in and willing to debate me, though.
I've known Mr. Rossley for 7 years, and I've been to his chat room hundreds of times, and it's a really great chat room to discuss the Kennedy assassination, just to let people know. There's one thing Mr. Rossley always said that that really got me thinking about this. Do you know anything about Miltier?
Joseph Miltier. Sure.
That always raised a lot of suspicion. He was on tape talking about the assassination, I believe, and then you see him in the background of photographs.
Houston.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the key thing to remember about was when he talked about somebody shooting Kennedy from a tall building with a high-powered rifle, number one, he was talking about Miami. Number two, the scenario he described is in fact a single shooter scenario, a single assassin scenario. There's nothing about the triangulation of crossfire or anything like that. Now that's an utterly generic scenario, John Kennedy had suggested the same thing according to Kenny O'Donnell. You look at Kenny O'Donnell's Warren Commission testimony, Kennedy had just sort of speculated, hey, Kennedy was kind of a fatalist. He speculated, you know, hey, if somebody wants to shoot me, they can get in a tall building with a high-powered rifle and do it. And Forrest Sorrells, a Secret Service chief in Dallas, had speculated the same thing. So if Miltier had foreknowledge, it does suggest that Kennedy had his own foreknowledge, and so did Forrest Sorrells. Miltier said, if you actually look at a long version of Miltier's conversation with Willie Somerset, which was indeed taped by the Miami, Somerset taped it and gave the tape to the Miami Police Department, Miltier names the guy who he says will do it. He says Jack Brown will do it, except no one's ever connected a fellow named Jack Brown to the assassination. As for Miltier being seen in one of the photos, that's not him. The House Select Committee on Assassination did a very careful analysis, and it's simply not Miltier. He's way too tall to be Miltier. The FBI, in the wake of the assassination, particularly the Atlanta office, went to considerable effort to track down all the right-wing extremist Klan types who might have been involved, and established that Miltier, in fact, was in Quitman, Georgia, on the day of the assassination. So basically what you had was somebody, it was a racist blowhard who was talking about shooting Kennedy. He not only, by the way, in the conversation with Somerset, mentioned shooting Kennedy in Miami from a tall building with a high-powered rifle. He also said, like in the summer, Kennedy comes out on the veranda of the White House, You can go up in one of those hotels near there where the rifle is knocked down, and you can like shoot him on the veranda of the White House. So what he was clearly doing was simply, spinning out various scenarios. There's really no evidence that he knew anything about it. It's also the case that
Here's
racist buddies would not have had anything like the capability of the sophistication to pull off any elaborate or sophisticated plot. Certainly one of them might have had a gun and been able to shoot Kennedy, but in terms of pulling off some kind of elaborate cover-up that required cooperation of a large part of the federal government, they just didn't have, they weren't smart enough and they weren't well-connected enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But Mr. Rossley, I know you...
Melchior also said, it is in the works right now. And he never said Miami.
The context was Miami.
He never said Miami.
He said, I've got the film, sir.
He never said Miami.
All right.
It is in the works right now.
Here's the transcript. Somerset, I think Kennedy is coming here on the 18th to make some kind of speech. I imagine it will be on TV. Melchior, you can bet your bottom dollar he's going to have a lot to say about the Cubans. There's so many of them here. Somerset, yeah, well, he will have 1,000 bodyguards. Don't worry about that. Melchior, the more bodyguards he has, the easier it will be to get him. Somerset, well, how in hell do you figure would be the best way to get him? Melchior, from an office with a high-powered rifle. And then he says, how many people does he have going around who just look just like him? Do you know about that? Somerset, no, I never heard that he had it. Melchior, he has about 15. And then wherever he goes anyplace, he knows he's a marked man. So the context is Miami, and Melchior said Kennedy has 15 lookalikes going around looking just like him.
And I think this is what you're referring to when Mr. Spector and Dr. Shuyers were talking to each other.
Yep.
Arnold Spector said, quote, where did he, talking about Connally, where did he feel himself receive a shot?
And in the right chest.
Yeah, and then he said in the right chest.
Yep.
Now,
That's
Shuyers. Now, is that what Shires, you're referring to? Yeah. Because it says, where did he feel himself receive a shot?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Because later in the testimony, they do talk about the back wound. And
it's elliptical. It's elliptical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And there was also no yawing. The bullet did not yaw or tumble. You can find that in Frazier's testimony, FBI Frazier, Volume 3, page 458.
You said the bullet
didn't yaw. Exactly, Tom. I don't
those
believe
bullets did not yaw or tumble. And that's an FBI expert.
You mean he's saying that it didn't tumble into Connally's back?
Those bullets did not yaw or tumble. Frazier's testimony is in Volume 3, page 458.
I want the exact quote in context.
Then read it. I just gave you the quote. Volume 3, page 438.
Frazier would not possibly say that a bullet...
You want everybody else to do your research.
Frazier would not possibly say that a bullet who passed someone through someone's body would not tumble.
Well, I just told you what it says, and I told you where you can find it. Volume 3, page 438. Did you get it that time, Professor?
Well.
Let me do something that I've done every day of my life for the past 40 years.
Okay.
This is what I say to everybody in my chat room. Until you've read the evidence and testimony in the 26 volumes for yourself, you will never know for sure which side is lying to you. It's that simple. I've never spouted anything without giving an official citation for it, and I've never asked anybody to take my word for it. Mm-hmm. My goal is to get everybody to read the evidence and testimony in the 26 volumes, mm-hmm. and the Church Committee's 14 volumes, and the House Select Committee's 12 volumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the only way you'll be sure, positively sure, of which side is lying to you.
Yeah.
Now we'll go to another one. We know about Oswald sending people to Guy Bannister's office in New Orleans.
Right.
Well, they did the same thing in Dallas at 3126 Harlandale. That's where they housed several different anti-Castro organizations, including the Fair Play for Cuba Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Volume 19, page 534.
So Oswald was doing the same thing in Dallas that he was
in Dallas that he did in, yep. Yep, he was undercover, pretending to be a leftist, and exposing leftist people to the right.
Okay. I'm afraid that's simply another one of those sightings. I think you remember.
I just gave you an official citation.
Yeah, you gave me it, Tom. You don't understand the so-called official citations simply include a lot of raw material that is undigested. Somebody reports something, somebody records it, but that doesn't prove that it's true. It's simply recorded. All kinds of reports come in. Look, I can show you lots of FBI UFO reports.
Well, you believe in UFOs, don't you, sir? I mean, you believe,
I believe
in UFOs and Bigfoot.
I believe that people see things in the sky that they don't identify.
You believe in a single bullet theory. You have to believe in UFOs and Bigfoot and Loch Monster and that stuff. They're all in the same category.
But isn't it true that, you know the famous diagram that they have of the bullet zigzagging around? I'm sure you've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
Isn't it true that that's
not... Matter of fact, it's in the House Select Committee's volumes.
Right, right. But isn't it true that that's not accurate? Isn't it true that Governor Connally was, if you look at it, if me and you were to look at it, then Governor Connally would be lower, and he was more inside the car?
But sometimes he was, sometimes he wasn't. I mean, the guy is 6'4". How much room do you think his butt had on a jump seat?
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't know how.
Say, take a guy 6'4", put him on a jump seat. How much room do you think he had with a big butt?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, okay. But Connally was often inboard. There was a Dallas, for example, a freelancer named Robinson who shot some photos that later appeared in Paris Match. It was back, I guess, probably on Harwood, shows Connally well inboard. There's a frame from the Much More film of the limo rounding Main Street going from Maine to Houston, and Connally is far inboard. iTech Corporation, looking at this Bruder film, found some pairs of frames that actually constituted stereo pairs, and you could estimate Connally's position, and they estimated 4 to 8 inches inboard. But let's go back to what Frazier said about yawing bullets. That is not in the context. I just found Tom's citation. That is not in the context of the bullet that hit Connally in the back. That is in the context of the general reliability of the Manica Carcano and the ammunition made by Western Cartridge Company for the Manica Carcano. It has nothing to do with the wound in Connally's back.
Okay.
I'm sitting here looking at it on the Mary Farrell Archive.
On my website, there's a button that says Witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And under that Witness button, you'll find another 40 or 50 sub-buttons, one of which is Frazier. You read the testimony yourself. I put his whole testimony on there.
Connally's nowhere mentioned here. It's not the context. Connally's not the context. The context is how good is the rifle and how good is the ammo. And the context is that you just fire it. No, it won't tumble or yaw. Frazier never says that it would not tumble or yaw if it hit something, and he would never say such a thing because he's a forensic expert, and he knows that it would. A bullet hits something, or for example, patches Kennedy, it'll tumble. And that apparently is what happened. It's odd that Tom thinks he's more of an expert than all the members of the House Select Committee on Assassinations Forensic Pathology panel that made a considerable point of that very fact. The oval wound in Connally's back, they indicated it was evidence that the bullet had hit something else. The obvious thing it might have hit is John Kennedy.
Mr. Rossley?
I just told you where to find Frazier's testimony.
Okay.
I'm looking at it.
Go to my testimony button, click on Frazier.
I'm looking at it on the Mary Farrell Archive.
Okay. Isn't it true that some women even saw Lee Oswald in Guy Bannister's office?
Yep. Is Guy Bannister's secretary and her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Delphine Roberts.
Right. Yeah.
Senior and junior.
Yeah, there are a few problems.
And also another guy that I have no faith in, but I got to tell you what he said, was Ron Lewis.
Oh.
Ron Lewis, the author of Flashback.
Yeah, Delphine Roberts is really lacking in credibility. She didn't, interestingly, Gareth investigation in the late 60s didn't interview her, did interview her, and she didn't say anything about that. She finally started that telling that story in the 1970s. The House Select Committee on Assassinations said they didn't believe her, largely because the House Select Committee had other witnesses who clearly had been around Bannister's office the whole time, like Jack, I think it's Newbro, and I think Mary Grumble, something that starts with a B, people who'd been there quite a lot, and they simply had not seen Oswald there, and they simply decided they did not believe Delphine Roberts. Jack Martin also said that that Oswald had been around, but he had so little credibility. His testimony, shall we say, evolved over time, and he started calling people on the weekend of the assassination, making what he thought was an important claim that David Ferry might, back when Oswald was in the Civil Air Patrol, have taught Oswald to fire a foreign weapon, might have given him some firearms training of some kind. That was all he was saying the first,
counterpoint
assassination.
Yes.
Counterpoint.
Okay.
Again, you're going from one subject to 16 subjects at a time. And now I want to ask you, if everybody that has any testimony that indicates conspiracy, you label them a liar, no credibility. How? Name one of them that was charged with perjury, sir. Name one of them that was charged with perjury.
No one has been charged with perjury in this case, either on assassin witnesses or conspiracy witnesses, because it's, except for the Clay Shaw thing, it's never been a bona fide criminal case. It's always been the subject of a government investigation, truth-finding panels.
Sir, when somebody testifies under oath and they are less than truthful, that is perjury. Now, when you charge somebody with perjury, that's going to require a trial with witnesses from both sides. That's why none of the people you claim lied were ever charged with perjury.
None of the people you claim.
Now, somebody on your side was charged with perjury, sir. And that was CIA Director Richard Helms. He was charged with perjury and found guilty and got a 2-year suspended sentence and a $2,000 fine.
Because Helms had nothing to do with the assassination.
I'm talking about perjury in general. When you testify under oath, when you lie, you're charged with perjury.
He had nothing to do with the assassination.
Yeah.
Well, don't close the door on that, buddy. He was with the CIA back then.
Yeah, but
so don't close the door on it yet.
I was just going to say there are people. I've read most of the evidence and testimony from the House Select Committee on Assassinations and the Warren Report or Warren Commission. There are people who contradict each other, who say that what Professor McAdams is saying and who's saying what you're saying, and none of them were charged with perjury, though, right?
That's right, because it would have required a trial.
Okay.
And in trials, facts come out. You see, the first thing the Warren Commission did, when you read their executive sessions, the first thing they did was they suspended That means I can produce any evidence against you that I want, and you can't challenge it. The second thing they did was they suspended the adversary procedure. That means I can say anything I want against you, and it's accepted, and you don't have a lawyer to cross-examine me to make sure I'm any up and up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a kangaroo court, is what the Warren Commission was, sir.
Those rules of due process exist to protect defendants, live defendants who might be put in jail or even executed. Those people get protections under the U.S. Constitution. Dead people do not have a right to have their historical memory somehow protected by constitutional rights in history.
Well, now you know why one of their own, Jack Ruby, murdered one of their own, Lee Oswald.
In history, you want to use all of the evidence, even evidence that might not be admissible in court, simply because in history you're concerned with the truth, but in a judicial proceeding, you sort of care about the truth, but you also care about due process. So you don't just care about the truth, but you care about restraining government and...
Well, the Warren Report was so far from the truth, it's not even funny.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, it was thrown out of a courtroom in Louisiana. Because it's nothing but hearsay. Out of United States courtroom, throughout the Warren Report.
Which proved
nothing. Court proceeding.
It proved nothing. You had one judge who simply didn't want to accept it as authoritative. Fair enough. I mean, the judge can do what he wants to. It doesn't change the merits of the Warren Commission report.
It certainly does. In the United States courtroom, the Warren Commission was the Warren Report was thrown out of court.
That was Judge Edward Hagerty, right?
Aloysius Edward Aloysius Hagerty. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he certainly wasn't on Garrison's side.
But
Let Orbogard testify.
Earl Warren was the Supreme Court justice, and he didn't throw it out of court, although it, of course, never came before him, and there's no particular reason.
The Warren Report and a courtroom have nothing in common, sir. Absolutely nothing.
The Warren Commission, first of all, in any court, there's a principle of best evidence, which simply says that if you actually want to convict somebody, or for that matter, let them off, you don't use any secondary source like the Warren Commission report. You have to have the witnesses actually there. So that means no matter how good the Warren Commission report was, it wouldn't be best evidence in any actual criminal case. But as for a judge deciding such a judge, remember, Earl Warren was a judge, too. The Warren Commission report was... Not part of any criminal prosecution. It was simply an attempt to get at the historical truth. Those are two very different things.
Yeah, and they flim-flammed it, didn't they? They repeatedly withheld evidence, altered evidence, destroyed evidence, lied, suborned perjury, and intimidated witnesses repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not true.
Mr. Ruffley, is it true? When they caught Lee Oswald in the theater,
in the Texas theater,
is it true that he was getting up from seat to seat, and then when
they finally got him, he
drew his gun on an officer.
He sat next to several. He got up and sat next to several different patrons of the theater.
Do you have any speculation?
I thought he was looking for somebody. Yeah, read it in the testimony.
Okay, any speculation? You think he was looking for somebody to?
That's what it indicates to me.
Okay.
Of course, Professor McAdams would probably think he was looking for a corned beef sandwich. I don't know.
Actually, I think there's only evidence that he was sitting in two places. One row, like the second row from the back toward the middle, and then when the cops came in, he sort of moved to a seat toward the side, which is where he was sitting when he confronted Officer McDonald.
Well, that is it. Manager at the West 26 volume, sir.
He pulled his gun on Officer McDonald.
Yeah. A lot of people say that he pulled his gun on him, on Officer McConnell, out of suspicion, out of knowing that he was...
Well, there's some unanswered questions about that, too. Because one of the witnesses saw the gun in a hand that was bare arm, and Oswald had a long-sleeved shirt on.
Hmm.
And then there's different stories about did he pull the trigger or not. Another one, Officer McDonald. He has different stories as to who pointed him out. Who pointed Oswald out in the theater? And then he had different stories about the trigger being pulled. So I mean, it's lie after lie after lie.
McDonald was pretty consistent that the Oswald pulled the trigger. The hammer of the gun actually hit the web between Oswald's thumb and forefinger, which may have been why it didn't fire. It's also quite clear that Johnny Calvin Brewer pointed out Oswald because Brewer had seen. Brewer was a clerk in a shoe store.
He saw
Oswald sort of looking somewhat suspicious, slinking into the entranceway to his store while there were cop cars driving up and down Jefferson Avenue, and then Brewer followed Oswald into the Texas Theater, waylaid Julia Ann Postal, who was a ticket taker, and asked her to call the cops. She didn't call the cops, and the cops descended on the Texas Theater, and it was Brewer who pointed out the suspicious guy.
Somebody sitting in the aisle pointed out Oswald to him. Brewer up on the stage. One story was Brewer up on the stage pointed him out, and another story was that somebody in the aisle pointed, sitting on the, in the seat in the aisle pointed out Oswald.
Well, what
so it just
Oswald,
kind of comes up with more than
what does what does all that mean if you had so many
it
lies?
Means that he's a liar once or twice. That's
well,
it.
Tom, Tom, if there were so many, if everyone was lying,
because
they probably would be
the places,
Tom, can I answer that? If someone was, if there were all these lies, people would probably tell a more consistent story. If you analyze any body of testimony carefully, and people at all sophisticated about criminal justice, just the actual cops know that typically witness testimony has all kinds of contradictions in it.
Then you're suggesting that everybody was in on the frame-up in order for everybody to have the same consistent story.
I'm suggesting that witness testimony is unreliable.
You're a conspiracist.
If it were... What?
You think that everybody was in on the cover-up. You're a conspiracist.
Tom somehow doesn't understand that not all testimony is either true or lying. But the truth is quite a lot of testimony is just flat mistaken. It's perfectly honest, but somebody is...
Talking about different testimony from the same person, sir. That means it lies.
For one reason or another, mistaken. You don't assume that someone's lying if they have no particular reason to lie. It was pretty clearly Johnny Calvin Brewer who had to point out Oswald because he's the one who had seen Oswald. Why would a liar do any, who is trying to serve the, to try to convict Oswald, say anything other than that it was Johnny Calvin Brewer who pointed out Oswald? The only reason I can think of is that there probably a lot of the cops in the theater weren't clear on exactly who had pointed the person out, because Brewer was probably talking to one of the cops.
All right, tell us exactly where Brewer was when he pointed out Oswald to Officer McDonald.
Don't know. My understanding is he was down near the front of the theater.
No, sir, they said, McDonald said he was up on the stage.
Okay, well, so...
Well, who was the guy sitting in the seat in the theater that pointed out Oswald to McDonald?
This is probably no guy at all.
Oh, well, this is what McDonald told us.
Well, if
McDonald's credibility, sir.
If McDonald was lying...
I'm going to repeat it. That's the disadvantage you're at by not having the 26 volumes.
If McDonald was lying, why didn't he tell the lie that was convenient for the cops, the prosecutors, and the Warren Commission? If you look at witness testimony, there are lots and lots of inconsistencies typically in witness testimony, which is why, by the way, conspiracists particularly like witness testimony.
Well,
if you go through it very carefully, you can support about any theory you want because it's so much all over the place.
John, I tell you what.
The best evidence is evidence for
John, nobody wants a damn opinion. John, yes, what we want from you is evidence and testimony, and what volume and what page, okay?
That's
how things are done in the American jurisprudence system.
The best evidence is always the hardest scientific evidence, which is things like autopsy photos and x-rays, or the ballistic evidence.
Well, we blew that out of the water an hour ago, John.
Bullets match to particular guns, handwriting evidence showing the particular person bought a particular weapon, fingerprints. That's always the hardest evidence. Eyewitness testimony is usually the less decisive evidence, and anybody in law enforcement, certainly any psychologist who specializes in memory would tell you that.
Yeah. Okay. John, do you want to quote some evidence and testimony from what volume and what page, or don't you?
Tom, look, you're being silly here.
No, I'm not. I can no, tell this you, is the way jurisprudence is done in America. Unless you want to practice Nazi justice. Do you want evidence and testimony from what volume and what page, yes or no?
Tom, I do not have the volume and page in front of me at all times.
A college professor
because
is not prepared to debate? Are you crazy?
Because I know how to find it. I just found your testimony from Frazier, and it didn't say what you said it said. You want to simply ask me where to find something, I will tell you where to find it. I don't remember the page number. It's stupid to try to remember all those page numbers when you know where to find it and can find it when you need to.
Do you encourage your class to take notes on your teaching, sir?
Okay, encourage them to take notes, yeah.
And you don't take notes yourself, sir?
Okay, guys, this is, come on, no personal attacks.
Not a personal attack. The man is a college professor, and he teaches a course on the assassination. Mm-hmm. And he already told me that he encourages his class to take notes. I asked him, does he take notes?
Well, how many
What's
pages?
Wrong with that question?
Well, no, there's nothing wrong with the question. I'm just... I
then
mean,
let him answer it.
Okay, all right.
Do you take notes, Professor?
Sometimes when I'm working on one particular thing, I don't particularly have notes in front of me on anything you might ask.
Would you do that you were going to debate me?
Tom, and often I don't have notes at all because I know where to find things. I know that such and such was in the House Select Committee. I know that such and such is in interviews with Garrison Investigation, and I know where to find it.
But you can't order your people. You want them to take your word. Is that what you're telling me?
They can go look. It's easy to find.
Okay, let's switch gears here. We only got a few minutes left. Mr. Rossley, you remember the...
I'm here.
Yeah, okay, in the movie JFK, there is one part that Mr. X said that was probably the most profound of the whole movie. He said, ask the question, why? Why was he killed? Why do you think that Kennedy was killed? Why do you think this big conspiracy happened?
Why do I think it?
Yes.
I don't have an answer for that. I'm not one of the conspirators. You're trying to get me to speculate. Anybody that speculates is a fool because they're discussing a subject that they can't prove.
Okay.
I'm not one of them.
Let me rephrase the question then. Do you really think that Kennedy was any different than the other presidents?
Yes, I do. Okay. In June 4th... of 1962, he issued Presidential Executive Order 11-110, stripping the Fed of their power, over our monetary system. He ordered the troops home from Vietnam a month before he was killed. He was going to eliminate the oil industry's 27.5% oil depletion allowance. Mm-hmm. And he demanded a fair shake from the American corporations for the American people. Among other things.
Yeah.
Huh?
Like, for example, the Steel Corporation.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. That is what they sandbagged him. Mm-hmm. They betrayed him.
Okay. Professor McAdams, this may be talking a little more about politics than the actual scientific evidence and evidence of testimony, but do you think that John F. Kennedy was really different than his predecessors and successors, or do you think he was pretty much just cut from the same cloth?
Our presidents are different from each other. I think a lot of people on the political left want to portray Kennedy as more of a left-winger than he was. Remember, he's the guy who cut top marginal tax rates, which is why during the 80s, during the Reagan administration, the supply-siders who wanted tax rates cut, for those people, John Kennedy was a hero. He did attack the steel companies, attacking business always makes you popular on the left, except he and Bobby Kennedy used what amounted to Gestapo tactics against the steel companies when they defied what Kennedy wanted, and increased steel prices. By the way, that was what Kennedy wanted. That's not what he had any legislative power to order. FBI agents stormed into their offices and basically said, we're going to confiscate all your records, we're going to audit all your tax returns, you know, we're going to make huge trouble for you. Where Vietnam is concerned...
Where do I find a citation for what you just said? FBI did that to the U.S. steel.
Well, I read about it in an article back in the 1980s.
No, I don't want to talk to Professor. I want an official record. You talked about the FBI. You're talking about Kennedy using the FBI to pressure the U.S. Steel.
Just find it, Tom. You can easily do that.
Yeah, I didn't think
now,
you did.
Now, as for the...
engaged in character assassination. I'll tell you what happened with
No one seriously questions that Kennedy did that. In fact, Bobby had, in the 1950s, had been engaged in congressional investigations, for example, of mobsters that no doubt he was investigating bad guys, but some of the tactics used there really bore a lot of resemblance to Joe McCarthy's tactics.
There's
a McCarthy committee.
In the what?
Bobby Kennedy had a vendetta out against
you. I said same those tactics that you just alluded to, sir.
Oh, making wild charges about people, getting them in front of a committee and berating them, but for no actual public policy or criminal justice purpose, just to make a big show.
You never have anything specific, do you?
Well, let me go on to Vietnam. Okay. It's generally, a lot of people believe that Kennedy was assassinated because he was going to pull out of Vietnam. There's one source on this. Often there's a killer piece of evidence. There's one source that's simply better than any others. The best source of this is an interview done by Bobby Kennedy on April 30, 1964. Remember, that's after John had been assassinated, but it's also well before the Vietnam War had become massively unpopular. It's